Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. We are in week 10, part 2, Paradigms for Healing. I'm excited to be back with you. In this section, we are going to be talking about how to help other people. In the last section, we talked a little bit about the things that get in the way and how we can actually throw shame on somebody. In this section, we're going to be talking about how we can be there and the barriers that get in the way and how we overcome those barriers. So, are you ready? Let's jump in. One of the issues with trying to support someone is we often believe the barrier to a person's wellness is knowledge. We believe if they know more, they will do the right things. And all they need is for us to fill their head with knowledge. When they get enough in their head, then suddenly they will be able to step forward in right belief and move where they need to move. But that's not quite how it works. Instead, it often ends up looking like this. Someone who's standing, and everyone around her is saying all sorts of things. We explain about what the Bible says about getting well, about getting help, about getting a team in place, about keeping a positive attitude, about diet and nutrition, about self-care, about abusive relationships, meds, keeping at work and grades, the implications of their mental health, about self-care. And we place a different expectation than before on this person. We don't place the expectation of you are clearly wrong and you're clearly bad because you're not doing something. Instead, what we say is, believe all these things and it will be better. Cram all these things in your head and it will be better. Believe these things, do these things, and it will be better. There's a big problem with this, though. And it's the big problem that we talked a little bit about last time, which is, do they have the capacity? Last time we spent a lot of time talking about stress tolerances window. People can hear what's in that stress tolerance window, but if they're already above their stress tolerance window, you're trying to give them information here when they can handle what's here because of the stress tolerance window, you can actually hurt somebody because you'll heap judgment or shame on them. What's interesting is when we look at somebody who's going through something like this, when we believe these things and they'll be right, do all of these things and it's going to be right, we have the same basic problem that we did when someone's already existing with a mental health condition. And that is, everything is linked to capacity. Can you do enough? Can you be enough? Do you have the capacity to do all of this on top of everything else you were already trying to do? And the answer is no, you don't. You are already maxed. Your capacity is above what you can handle. That's the reason that your capacity is shrinking. It's because you couldn't handle everything that you were doing before on top of life. Now, all of a sudden, you're trying to do a mental illness on top of all these things. It's too much. So the capacity, in some cases, shrunk. So what else do you do? Well, if you ask someone, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just be this? Why don't you just understand this? Why don't you believe this? If you do all these things, it will get better. And all they hear is shame. It's not good. Instead, they can feel silenced. They can feel alone. They can feel like nobody hears them. They can feel like they are all alone. And in that, they can feel like silence is violence. Because they've been left to their own devices. They've been left in a place where they cannot succeed. And because of that, a place where they are ultimately sitting alone, just waiting for everything to fall apart. So with that said, what do you do? What on earth can you do? You can't just tell someone the right things. You can't tell them to believe the right things. So what can you do? Well, we're going to go back to 2 Corinthians 1. And talk about and see what Paul says. Paul says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of all compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our troubles so that we can be comforted to any in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. If we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which produces in you patient endurance of the same sufferings we suffer. And our hope for you is firm, because we know that just as you share in our sufferings, so also you share in our comfort. And it continues. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the life sentence of death. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such deadly peril, and he will deliver us again. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us, as you help us by your prayers. Then many will give thanks on our behalf for the gracious favor granted in answers to the prayers of many. So what does Paul do in this space where there needs to be comfort? In some ways, he offers his own sufferings and his own afflictions and says, may the God of all comfort you, just as he comforted us. So, what do we do about these knowledge barriers? This is the big question, right? What do we do about them? How are we going to get rid of these things? What are we going to do? Because we can't just barrel through them. We're just loading shame on top of people when we do. Well, what we can do is listen. Now, I love this picture because it has big ears, because it fits how we should think about this. Have your ears out and tuned to what people are hearing, or what people are saying, rather. What you need to know is that their knowledge gap might not be a knowledge gap at all. There might be something else going on, and unless you're listening to find out what is the basis of that gap, you won't actually get to the bottom of it. But if you listen carefully to their story, if you listen carefully to what's going on with them, if you help them see by just watching and helping them understand the narrative that they're telling you, you might be able to see some things. And one of the things that you often see is that knowledge barriers are about belief. Knowledge barriers often have nothing to do with the thing that is in question. When you're saying, why don't you go see a therapist? It's not a question of, is the therapist good? It's a question that's different than that. It's often not a question of, can I actually do self-care? It's a question that's different than that. It's often not a question of medications or seeing doctors or doing the work to get well. Often there's beliefs behind those things that are actually impacting whether someone moves into that space or doesn't move into that space. And those are the questions we really have to listen for, because that's actually what's causing somebody to get hung up. So, what does that look like? Those could be questions like, am I worth the work? Am I good enough? Can I make it through all of this? How do I do this on top of everything else I was doing? Am I going to lose my job? How am I going to take care of my family? Am I defective? Is this all there is to my life from here on out? These are really big questions. And they're not questions of, can you see a therapist? They're questions of, I'm wrestling with the very nature and the fabric of my life right now, and I don't know how it works. And I need to know how it works so that I can engage my life and engage the healing that I need to engage. So in this space, we have to pull back a little bit and say, okay, why aren't you seeing your therapist? Why aren't you taking your meds? Why aren't you exercising or doing self-care? What are you feeling right now? Not just the depression, but what else are you feeling? What expectations are you feeling? What are the things that are overwhelming you? What are you afraid of? And as we begin to name those things and they become concrete, we can actually start to work through them and see what the answers to those things are. But can you imagine being in a spot where you're depressed and you're broken and you're anxious and you're worried about losing your job and you don't know how you're going to pay your bills, and now you're getting all of these extra expenses because you need to see a therapist and a psychiatrist, and now you're slowing down and saying, oh, I'm going to lose my job, and if I do, I can't pay for anything. And if I can't pay for anything, I can't get better. And if I can't get better, I can't get another job. And if I can't get another job, I can never get better. Do you see how this is instantly hopeless based on one belief? And there's a lot of them here. Am I worth the work? A lot of people believed they weren't worth the work when I was working with them. And so struggling to engage the work itself just from a perspective of am I worth it was incredibly difficult. The second question, am I good enough? We've talked about this at length. When that's falling apart, how do you help someone reintegrate into that space? Can I make it through all of this? Once again, this is that rock in that river that's being worn away. We don't know how long this process is going to last. We don't know if it's going to be about some breakthrough in therapy or some breakthrough in meds or all of the above with self-care and everything else included. We don't know how this is going to work out. It could be that it takes 3 months and they are put back together and they are great. This could be 3 years that they're struggling every day to do anything. And so the question, can you hold out that long? One, we don't know how long it is that you have to hold out. And two, we don't know what the process of holding out is going to be. How can I do this on top of everything else? Especially this came across with parents. Because you have all of these obligations with kids and with family and with a job and how you pay for things and houses and mortgages and bills. And we've built this life and now it's not sustainable. And how are we going to hold this? How am I going to take care of my family? That's the big question under all that. And then, is this all there is to my life from here on out? It's really easy after being a river rock for a while and being worn down by that stream to just say, I don't know if there's anything more than this. Now, what's interesting is, were any of those problems, were any of those questions about necessarily seeing a therapist or seeing a psychiatrist? No, they're not. But they're the things dominating people's minds and thus their behavior. This frantic movement to try and make sure that everything is covered that oftentimes fails to take care of the one thing that it needs to, which is how do I take care of myself so that I can get better? Because me doing this frantic movement to try and make sure everything is covered is not actually helping me. I'm not actually progressing or moving forward. I am just not dropping the ball. And the harder my mental health struggle gets, the less likely I am to be able to keep up all of this. How am I going to pay my bills? What if something happens to me? What if? What if? What if? These questions keep rolling and keep coming. Because there's always another reason to question. And so your job is pretty simple in this space. Your job is to listen. Right? Look at those big ears. Your job is to listen so that you can hear them and you can help them know that they are good and they are enough. It's like the app line, people don't know how much you care. People don't know how much you know until they know how much you care. Your job when you start with somebody, like when Eugenia was diagnosed with clinical depression and when she was going through her hard time, my first job is just to care. Nothing else. I don't need to help her do anything. I don't need to solve problems. I need to care. Then I might have an immediate need. I need a therapist. Okay, I can take care of that immediate need. But I need to care. I need to be there with her, and I need to listen. I don't need to say anything. I don't need to give her advice. All that she needed to hear from me was, I get it. Unfortunately, the suicidal thing, I understand. I've been there. And when we do that, listening gives dignity to another person. This is really important. The person that you are sitting with, no matter who it is, whether it's your mom, your daughter, your spouse, a friend, whoever it is, they feel like their world is coming apart and they feel like they're not a real person in some ways anymore. They feel separated from themselves. But when you sit with that person and you listen to their story and you do not judge, because if you judge, that ruins all of this. When you do not judge, it sets them up where they can listen and know that you value them as a person. That you still see them as that Genesis 1 and 2. They are still an image bearer. That you still see them in Ephesians where God says, you are my adopted sons and daughters. You still see them in Isaiah 61. That you still see that part of them that is valuable and good. Not just the twisted and broken parts, but the value and good that's underneath. And that lends dignity to a person. Not just because they see that you care, but because you actually see them as someone who matters. Now there are other things that are going to come up. There are other things that you're going to have to get through. But if you can do this one thing, everything else will get so much simpler. Listen and give them the dignity of being human. I remember hearing story after story of people who said, I feel like you heard me. And in your homework, the video from Andrew Solomon, he clearly states that. So if you didn't watch that yet, go watch it. So what are some of the other barriers that you need to know? The person you're talking to, they do not know what they need to get better. You walk through and they're like, I just need to muscle up and make it. You're like, no, you don't. You're trying that. Is it working? How is this result? Is it great or is it not great? Because it looks not great. Sometimes people just don't know what they don't know. And sometimes they don't know what they need in order to get better. So what do you do in that case? One, ask the question, are you the right voice to tell them? Just because you have the power does not mean you have the permission. Anyone who's married will understand this instantly, or anyone who has kids. Sometimes you will be the person who says the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And then anyone else will tell your spouse or your kids the same thing and they'll go, oh, that's brilliant. I have never thought of it that way. And you will just put your palm on your forehead because you've said this a dozen times. Just because you have the power doesn't mean you have the permission. It could be that you are going to set this person off because you're too close to them. It could be that they just can't hear it from you. It could be that they need another voice with more credibility than yours to say the same thing. Whatever the reason, it doesn't matter. Just because you have the power doesn't mean you have the permission. So, ask the question, are you the right voice to say this? You might know everything that needs to happen. That's great. You might also know who the voice is that they need to hear it from. And that's great too. That said, that does not mean you don't have the permission. Oftentimes, I have found that people will turn to me and say, Brandon, I need you to say this, because they'll listen to you. In which case, they're handing me the permission and saying, you need to do this. It could be that you're a friend or a family member that when you're one step further removed, right? And you're the right person to say this. Great. Go say it. This is love made manifest. So do it. Tell the truth. And if you don't have the permission, this is not the right space for you. That's okay. Make sure you know who it is the right space for and make sure they follow through. So, they're not doing what they need to do in order to improve. Uh-oh. You've got a bad case of somebody's not actually doing the right thing. Now, there's a bummer part of this. That bummer part is, who is in charge of their life? This is about the dignity of choice. Even if you know all the right answers, you know what to do, you know how to like work this thing through, you know how it needs to turn out, that does not mean that you get to control another person's decisions. When you're a parent, you have some ability to direct your kids. But with adults, man, you just wish you did sometimes. Because you don't. They're their own person. They make their own decisions. They move their own way. And because of that, you don't have the ability just to say, you must do this, and they will exactly do what you say. Instead, they're going to make their own decisions. And you can help them push in the right direction. You can find them the resources they need. You can give them the nudge. But ultimately, they make their own choices. And it's your job to give them the dignity of their own choice. We used to talk about the dignity of choice a lot, especially when people were building their support networks for caregivers. Because a lot of people would put a name down. This is the person I want to support me. And then they would basically do one of two things. One is, they would say, no, that person's too busy. They'll never actually support me. And they would cross the name off the list. Or the second is, they wouldn't tell that person that they were counting on that person. And they would just expect them to show up perfectly when they needed them. And both of those things just go so horribly wrong. When you're dealing with any other person, you need to give them the dignity of their own choice. They have the right to say yes. They have the right to say no. You do not get to say no for them. You do not get to say yes for them. They make their decisions. So that being said, when you're talking to another person and you are horribly frustrated because they just won't do the right thing, you're not responsible for their decisions. That is their choice. And I understand it doesn't feel good. But it does not change that that is theirs and not yours. What happens when you run into the next barrier? And you say, they just need to do this. They just need to do this one thing. They just need to call this therapist. They just need to stay on their meds. They just need to take the pills every day. They just need to exercise so that they can actually sleep so that their meds will work. They need to stop drinking 17 Cokes a day. They need to stop drinking coffee like it's going out of style. What are they doing? You are not in control. This is one of the hardest things as a supporter, is you have to let go of control even when you so badly want to control everything. We talked about this posture earlier in this class, the posture of receiving. Well, in the Quaker prayer, receive and release, the second part of this is to put your hands down and let the things that you are holding that you need to let go of fall. I release these things. And in this case, you have to let go of control. Now, my guess is that the person that you're talking to is probably aware that you know what they need to do and that they're not doing it. My guess is that you've probably told them at least once or twice. If you haven't told them, maybe you should. If you have the permission, you should definitely say it. It's better than getting frustrated on your own because you haven't, that's for sure. But if they're not doing it, and you've told them, and you don't have the power to change it, you're not in control, you have to release. I know it's hard. Because in some ways it feels like letting go of someone you love. Because you desperately want them to get better. And you are grabbing on so tight to the hopes that they can, and why aren't they taking it as seriously as you are? And I know it feels like mourning them because you're having to let go. But I will tell you that trying to control the situation will burn you out and hurt you. There's a statement in counseling that you should never outwork your clients. I find this really helpful in this space, especially when we're talking about control and especially when you're talking about helping somebody move into a space that they're not moving into. And that is, I am willing, when I'm walking with somebody in a mental health crisis, to do as much work as they're willing to do. If they're willing to give 100%, then I will give 100%. And I will help in every way I can. But if they're fooling around with this thing, and they're willing to give 15%, if I am willing to give 100%, and they're willing to give 15, there's this huge mismatch. And what will actually happen is, with that mismatch, I will build resentment against them because I'm giving it all and they're not. I become the martyr in this case, and I resent them for it. And then they resent me for trying to control them. So that turns out great, doesn't it? We both resent each other, and the crisis still exists exactly as it did before. Yay! No, that's terrible. Instead, we have to release control, not outwork the people that we're talking to, and know that as much as they might want our help, we can only give the help to the level that they're willing to receive and act on it. That's it. If you can do that, you can set a really healthy boundary that will help you move forward. Another thing that you can do is educate yourself. Be patient. Listen empathically. There's a second level of education that is really helpful in this case. The first level is to know what to do. It's how to know how to find the right therapist, how to find the right psychiatrist, how to do all those things. We'll also talk about most of those resources next week when we talk about churches and what they can do to help somebody with a mental health issue. The other thing that you can do is you can listen to stories and educate yourself on what it feels like, what's going on inside their head, what they're going through. You can also read stories of friends and family members that have gone through the same sort of disorder, because in that you can discover what it is that they're feeling, what it is that you're going through, and you can find someone that understands you. And when that happens, you can begin to have a lot more empathy because you understand more what the person that you love is going through, and you feel validated because there's somebody who understands what you're going through as well. When you can go through that level of knowledge and understanding, there's just so much more hope because you understand the situation more fully. And on top of going and understanding the situation more fully, you are being validated and you are more able to validate the other person. This isn't just about knowledge. This is about the presence that you bring into the room. You become a presence of healing instead of a presence of judgment because you understand. So, educate yourself and listen and be patient. You can't control the situation, but you can control how much you know and your disposition towards how you're going to act in that space. So do the work to do that well. Uh-oh. What do you do when they don't think they can make it? This happens all the time, right? This is Robin Williams' 10,000th day. This is the person who is losing hope. That slow, slow loss of hope. What do you do? Well, Father Richard Rohr is a Catholic priest in New Mexico, and he has something he talks about called Father Energy. And the way he talks about it is really beautiful. He says, Father Energy is that we believe in someone until they can believe for themselves. It's that we have the ability as people to help someone else. When someone has no hope, we can literally hold hope in our hands. And we can hold it for somebody until they're willing and able to hold it for themselves. The way I used to say it is, I will believe and hope for you until you can hold it on your own. And when we do that, they still feel like there's a lot of love and power that they feel coming out of that. And as well, because there's this hope being held here, when they're ready, they know they can take it for themselves. This is also the same energy that allows you to do things you didn't know you could do. It allows you to play sports in ways you didn't know that you could do, or build things the way that you didn't know you could do, get the job that you didn't know you could do, get into the school that you didn't know you could get into. It allows you to move into all of those spaces because you have someone who believes in you. And when you have someone who believes in you, you can do things that you otherwise could not do. So if someone's losing that battle with hope for them, you can't give them hope, but you can hope on their behalf, and you can tell them that you are hoping for them and that you don't expect them to hope on their own. That is a statement free of judgment and full of love. And if there's anything that somebody wants when they're going through a mental health condition, it's to be in a space where they are met with love, free of judgment. And where that love, free of judgment, pushes them towards healing. Is it hard being a supporter? You bet it's hard. It's so hard, it's crazy. I told you it's just as hard as going through a mental health issue. Yeah, it's really hard. Super hard. Is it frustrating? Yes, it's often frustrating. When you tell your spouse that they need to see a therapist and they're like, no. When you try to get someone help and they say no. When you work your butt off and they say no. Yeah, it's frustrating. When you have all the right answers and you're not able to help in any way, shape, or form, it's frustrating. But does that mean you're not doing a good job or not doing the thing you need to? No. The other thing about this is their problems will bring out your problems. Okay, we've talked about how when someone is in the middle of a mental health crisis, everyone else orbits around them. Well, welcome to the mental health crisis. You are now in orbit around them. And all of these things, these hard pieces, these frustrating pieces, these are triggers to make sure that your worst self comes out in the most important moments. Because you will be so anxious and tired and broken and frustrated. So how do you bring your best self forward when you have been doing everything and you are getting nothing back? Right? Their problems will bring out your problems. Your frustrations with whatever it is, with your job, with anything, they'll rise to the surface. Your trauma, straight up to the surface. Your control issues, straight up to the surface. Everything that you're dealing with right now will begin to rise in this situation and will come to a point where you need to deal with it. So, as a supporter, your issue is not only this person who you're trying to help, but now your own self. Because you're going to have to deal with your own stuff in order to be sane enough to help them. Now, remind you, we all build our life around our capacity. Right? You did too. You may have had a little bit of margin around the outside, but you did not have the capacity to take all of this other stress on and stay intact exactly the way you were. Your capacity is also going to be diminished a little bit because you're helping out in so many other ways. You are doing more. And it's going to cost you something. And you're going to have to do some work. There's no way around it. You get to do the work on yourself to make sure you can be a good support. I put up, please forgive me, because as a supporter, you're not going to do it perfectly. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to say unloving things when you didn't mean to. You're going to say loving things that are taken wrong. You're going to try to care and it's going to come out crooked. You're going to do your best, and unfortunately, you're going to learn how to do the right thing by doing the wrong thing. But if you show up every day in love, without judgment, you can be a really good support person. You can help in really beautiful ways. Next week we're going to talk about, or in the next section rather, we're going to talk about resourcing. And I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about how you can help yourself. This is just as important as any other space. I will see you then.